Dr. Dobiash, reel three.
My brother-in-law was cleaning the gun when it fired. And it fired through a top, through the top of a typewriter, which was against the wall, and the bullet lodged in the wall, under the window. We immediately cleared everything, nothing happened, but about 24 hours later, Gestapo came, we could hear it outside. I was not in, but my mother was in, my sister was in, and I think my father was in. And Gestapo came, showed them, and they said, we are looking for weapons, you have weapons here. And my mother, who was very, very strict and very, how should I say, a marvelous person, she would not be flustered or anything. He said, no, we have no arms. And he said, apparently there is somewhere a bullet because something was fired in this room or in one of the rooms. And my mother said, yeah, well, of course I know what it is. Come, I'll show you. And she said, she thought it so quickly. She said, yes, it's in there, the bullet is there, and here is the top of the typewriter. It went through. But that happened when my son-in-law was discharged from the army. That's months ago. And while he was cleaning it before giving it up, it fired and the bullet remained in the wall. They took the bullet out, left, and that was... Nothing happened, because they believed finally the story that it happened. My brother-in-law having been an officer, and that he claimed, and that it was declared with such an ease, this happened, so we still kept our gun, and they left. Yeah. That was a close.
Any other narrow escapes?
The narrow escape was when they were looking from house to house. They were looking, asking again what weapons we had. And that was generally not against us, but it was against everybody in that area where we lived in the town. Again, they didn't find anything. Everything seemed to be all right.
When was it that you were arrested?
I was arrested in January 1941. It happened, and how it led to it is a story which is very heartbreaking, and I hate to think of it back. At the time, I was not supposed to have done any other activities, but our meek and unorganized resistance. But there was a family not far from Turnov. There were Jewish people whom I taught English in the hope that their relatives from the United States would give them an affidavit and take them out. Everything seemed to be working, except for the fact that they did not know how to escape from Czechoslovakia. I had some contacts, again, through Slovakia, where I could have helped them, and I had a note from my friend, from Charles Fish, that if they arrive in England, he would be able to assist them until they could go to join their relatives in the United States. The gentleman, his name was Mr. Weinberg, had a wife, a daughter, and a son, teenagers. They were terribly, terribly frightened, but hoping that through this help of mine they could escape. Before the escape, which was organized, I asked him, I gave him all the details, and I asked him specifically not to make any notes whatsoever, to memorize everything. They were English names, of course, English street, English, all in English, and he was afraid that he would forget. He wrote it down against my wishes and against my strict instructions. He was arrested with the whole family. The address book or notes were found. He was asked where he got it from, and he wouldn't tell until he was beaten. We know for sure from other people he was beaten almost to death, and finally he said he got it from me. And that was in January 1941. Gestapo came, arrested me. What are your connections? Who is this man in England? They were not interested that I helped, or was trying to help a Jewish person. They were interested in my contacts in England. They found out that I went to England before the war, and that was it. I was arrested and taken to prison in Jičín, not far from Turnov, in a prison called Kartuzy. From there I was sent to Prague to interrogations at the Peček Palais, Peček House in Prague, which was one of the worst interrogation centers, beaten and everything, but I couldn't tell them more than the story that I knew the man and that's all. And I was asked for a contact for somebody who wanted to emigrate to the States. That's all. I knew nothing else about it. Passed somehow, but from there I was sent to Terezin, to the Kleine Festung, to the fortress.
Can you tell me what you saw in the headquarters in Prague?
Yes, I can tell you specifically one case which is absolutely shattering, and that was not in Prague. It was already in Jičín, where that Jewish person was also imprisoned, and every morning we had to open, they opened the doors of the cells, and he happened to be opposite me. It was, we were one person in one cell. They were not even SS who were in charge of the prison, but German police. The men in charge went with two other men with Sten guns, and they made the rounds every morning. The doors were opened one after the other, and we were told that we had to make an announcement when the door opens, in English, one man, healthy. If we were told, if you are not healthy, you say ill. So the doors opened, and I noticed on the other side, with my door open, the Jewish person was there. He opened, and he was not well. He must have been beaten up before, so he stood. And the Jews were asked not to say one man, one stinking Jew. In German, ein stinkender Jud. Then either gesund or krank. Healthy or ill. The man was ill, so he stood at attention. He said, ein stinkender Jud, a stinking Jew, ill. The commander of the policeman rushed in and started beating him over the head, kicked him and stepped out. He said, once more. And the Jewish person, beaten, bleeding, said, again, one ein stinkender Jud, ill. He went in and started beating him again. He walked out, he said, once more. And suddenly he realized, he said, one stinkender Jud, gesund, healthy. Then the policeman started to laugh. He said, you see, I'm the best doctor. He closed the door and went to the next one. Shattering experience which I shall never forget.
How many people do you think were being held in this Jičín?
Again, it's hard to say because they were three stories of the prison. I could see the cells only. When we marched in, they could have been about, I would say, 100. It was not a big prison. It was originally a prison for the criminals. And it was turned into political prison after the Nazis occupied the country. From there, I was transported to Prague in Peček Palais, for instance. We had to sit all in the auditorium, like an auditorium. When they went in, every prisoner had to stand at attention, you know, stand up, look against the men, and sit down and waited until they were called. And then individually, they were taken to the interrogation cells, and some of them didn't return. I don't know what happened, but of course, Peček Palais was famous for the, in the German version, the worst cases of subversion against the Nazis. I was there about three times, still interrogation whether I had any knowledge of spies through that man in from Mr. Fish. I said I didn't, even if I didn't know, so they could beat me as much as I could, which they did, but I couldn't, I didn't know anybody. It was my only source and my only contact, so I couldn't tell them all. From there I was sent back, I was sent to the Theresien Kleine Festung, the fortress. There they were about 300 prisoners in one cell, several big cells, but that was the prison where Princip, the man who assassinated the pretender to the Austrian throne, who killed him in Sarajevo, he was there and he died there.
And you were telling me earlier that this Kleine Festung was quite separate from the part where the Jews were
completely. This was a fortress. The Jewish people were kept in the village of Theresien, which was not far away. But we were, it was a fortress from the time of Maria Theresia, which was built in the Austro-Hungarian monarchy, again for the most serious cases of the Austrian, against the Austrian government. It exists now, it can be visited, and it's a worthwhile visit if anybody goes to Czechoslovakia.
From Kleine Festung you were transferred to Mauthausen, I think.
Yes, first to Prague, and from Prague we were taken by train to Linz. We were a group, small group, of about 24 prisoners, Czech prisoners, and we were taken by train with windows barred and with an SS in every compartment. There were other compartments. We don't know. I don't recall what kind of prisoners they were because we had no contact with them. But we were in about three or four compartments on the train to Linz. When we arrived in Linz, we were ordered with machine guns at the ready at our backs on the platform. We were handcuffed two and two together. And we were marched from the platform, we didn't know where. By the way, at that time we still didn't know to which concentration camp we were being sent until we arrived in Linz. We knew already from past experience that the concentration camp Mauthausen was not far from Linz, so we were assured that we were being taken to Mauthausen. While we were walking two and two together on the platform in Linz, we were absolutely horrified that the people, Austrian people, I presume, even though that part of the country was already part of the German Grossreich, were spitting at us and shouting at us abuses without even knowing why we were there or what kind of prisoners we were. That was a terrible disappointment for me specifically, because I was always under the impression that the Austrians were forced into the union with the Nazis and with Germans. We were taken to a small bus. I believe there were two, because we couldn't have fit it. My memory already fails me in that. But I know that we were transported to the prison in Linz, where we had to stay overnight. The prison was so overcrowded that we could not lie down at night, and we solved the problem by sitting. One prisoner sat down in the cell with the back to the wall and the next one in his lap, and like that we formed rows and we sat all night because we just couldn't lie down. In Linz, in the prison, we were joined by several German-speaking prisoners, and we were then taken to Mauthausen by train. I remember that I was sitting next to a German-speaking with an Austrian accent, probably. I found out afterwards that he was a former Austrian. He was at that time about 35, 40 years old. During the conversation on the train, I found out that he was an Austrian aristocrat by the name of Graf Colorado von Mansfeld, and he was there as an opponent of the Nazis. He came with us to the concentration camp. I met him there several times. We were working together, and finally he disappeared. I don't know whether he died or whether he was transferred to another camp. I never found out after the war. But he was a very courageous, very charming person. The others were Czech prisoners. About half of them were communists, and the hardcore of communists. So we were actually one of the worst little transports to be taken to Mauthausen at that time.
Worst in what sense?
Large transports came normally by bus, and they were taken direct to Mauthausen. They were the transports of French or Italians who were rounded up sometimes in villages and taken directly to the camp. We came to the camp already with a stigma of dangerous prisoners. When we arrived at the railway station in Mauthausen, there was a group of SS waiting for us, again with the machine guns, but they appeared quite friendly. We were surprised because we heard terrible stories about the concentration camp. We were rounded up and marched in about four abreast through the town. The people, while we were marching, did not take any notice at all of us. They did not jeer or spit like the ones at the railway station in Linz, but they just looked somewhere else, or they must have been used to transports of this kind. So we passed through the town. After the town finished on the road, we had a magnificent view of the River Danube. It was beginning of May, and the cherry trees were in full blossom. It was a sunny day. It looked absolutely gorgeous. We were marched through on that road until we were stopped and asked to go two together up a slow trail through some houses where the houses were built on the sides. We were going up the hill until we were hidden in a small thicket of trees. There, for the first time, the SS came to us and started beating us, asking one at a time why we were sent there. And I remember at that time that my neighbor on the train, Colorado von Mansfeld, was beaten because they laughed at him that he was an aristocrat who was imprisoned together with the communists and that they was the worst kind. I was beaten up too, but not as badly, because suddenly they realized, looked at the watch, and they said they had to proceed. When we got out of the thicket, we saw a road, and right in front of us, a fantastic building made of granite stone, which was the camp. It looked like a fortress. We were marched right through the gates, taken up some steps, and through a big gate which opened for us, and we were lined up on the so-called Appellplatz. That was normally the place where every morning and every evening the prisoners were counted. We were taken through the door and to the right and lined up there and asked to strip, which we did. We were told that we were going to have showers to delouse, that means to check for lice, and taken to the interrogation. We were all scared because we knew from experience by talking to people who were knowledgeable in these things that some of the showers appeared like showers, but they were gas chambers. So to the last minute, we were not sure whether we were being taken to gas chambers or to the showers. When we came down, we were greeted quietly by some Spanish speaking prisoners. We noticed from their blue triangles on their tunics that they were Spanish and they were barbers. As a matter of fact, most barbers in the camp were Spaniards. They shaved our heads, they shaved our groins, and we, while we were talking to them, I happened to speak Spanish. I asked them what was happening, and they assured us, he said, this is not a guest chamber, you are going to the showers. We were taken to the showers, hot showers, cold showers, we were properly cleaned, and we were taken in front of the Schreibstube, that means the office, where we were interrogated by SS and some prisoners who were commanded by the SS in case they would need interpreters, helped us, and they were very, very understanding and tried to make things much easier for us. After we were, our names were registered, we were taken to the so-called quarantine. There we had to stay for, I believe, I'm not quite sure, about 3 weeks. That was in case we brought some diseases. They were not afraid that the prisoners would get the contagious diseases, but there was a garrison of SS, and that's what they were worried about, so that contagious diseases wouldn't spread even to the military camp. We were, from that time on, we received our numbers, which we had to sew ourselves on the clothes, striped clothes, we received caps, and our number was registered. I remember my number was T in a red triangle, that means in German Czeche, Czech, red triangle, political prisoner, and the number 9703. To think that my number at that time was only in the 9,000. When we landed, the numbers were in the 260,000. A tremendous number of prisoners went into the camp, and when it was liberated by Colonel Seibel of the 11th Armored Division of the United States, there were about 22,000 prisoners. I'm not quite sure about the number, but that can be established from the books I have on hand. After 3 weeks or 4 weeks in the quarantine, we were taken to different barracks. The barrack where I went was, I believe, number 7 at first, which used to be so-called Czech block. Most of them were Czechs there, not all. And we were taken to the Appellplatz, where that's the place where prisoners were counted, and we were told which commandos we shall be working in. I was horrified that I was taken to the Wiener Graben, or the granite quarry. That was the worst kind of work in that particular camp.
How do you think they chose people for the different work?
I have no idea. I believe it was according to the papers which came with the prisoners, and the worst ones were sent to the granite quarry. Worst ones in their opinion. There was only one thing which was worse than working in the quarry, and that was the so-called Strafkompanie. The Strafkompanie had a red circle next to the number, and that meant that they were special prisoners. Most of them were annihilated after several days, because they were, it was punishment inside the camp. I was asked in the morning to line up and ask for the capo for the Wiener Graben, or the granite quarry, and in the morning we had to run and form, stay in the barracks under the number of the barrack where we were staying. We were counted, and when it was established that all the number agreed, that there was nobody missing, we had to form commandos, that means under certain capos or leaders of the prisoners, and we were taken to the Vinogradam. My first, that was outside of the camp, through the big gate, and we were passing as groups of SS, because the SS were stationed on each side of the road to the granite quarry. While we were passing, we were most of the time hit by the rifles of the SS who were standing by. When we came down, after about 100 yards, maybe 200 yards, we suddenly saw the granite quarry underneath us. It was very, very steep, very deep, and 186 steps led to the bottom of the quarry. Going down, we were chased first on the road, which was full of small granite stones. We had to run so fast that we, most of us, lost our clogs, and we had to run barefoot on awfully sharp granite stones, which was so painful that we just screamed of pain. Our feet were bleeding, and in the dirt, so many of them got infections and very soon died. When we came to the top of the 186 steps down, at intervals there were also SS waiting on the sides, and as we were passing, they were hitting us. So everybody, we were coming down in about 8 abreast. Nobody wanted to be on the sides. It was, of course, impossible to do it, so at times we had to, according to how we were lined up. And while we were running down, being chased down, so many prisoners fell on the steps, irregular steps. When they fell over and turned over some of the prisoners in front, and like cards, like dominoes, prisoners were falling down the stairs, hitting themselves, while the SS were standing there laughing. When we arrived to the bottom of the quarry, we were divided into smaller groups, doing different things, either breaking with dynamite the granite rock, or scraping the earth and putting the earth into the